What's up, entrepreneurs and business owners? We are here at the studio of the Stronger Business Podcast in Athens, Georgia. We have an episode I've been looking forward to for weeks. We get to dive into some really cool stuff today about the younger generation that's going to be employees, business owners, entrepreneurs, how they're wired, motivated, some of the things they're expecting coming out of college. We're going to dive into the side of being next level, elite at what you do, and talk about that journey a little bit. My guest today, man, he is so awesome. A lot of you know him. A lot of you know his wife. We've had her on the podcast a few times. She's helped me in business. He is one. All sorts of awards. I mean, just next level elite at what he does. He's highly educated. He's highly experienced. He is a friend of mine. I'm so excited to have him here. He is a professor at UGA. Ben Whipple, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Been looking to get on here for since we agreed to it a few weeks ago. So it'll be a fun time. I'm looking forward to it.
So, man, I'm so excited for this because you and I, obviously, you're an accounting professor. It's what I went to school for. It's my love language, numbers yes. and finance. We enjoy discussing those different types of things together. And so, I mean, when we get to get together on a podcast and talk about Athens and UGA and accounting and numbers and business and levels of success, like it's, dude, we could do this all day long.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to find anything better than that series of topics right there.
Best hour of my day right here.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's really cool, man. You have continued to just have a huge just growth and trajectory of your career of being the best at what you do and continuing to stay highly educated and highly experienced and just next level at what you do. I mean, you just continue to just everything I see about you from students to coworkers to industry awards and things, man, you just crush it. Everybody loves you. You're awesome at what you do. How in the heck did you get here? Why are you in this position? Give us a little story and background.
Yeah, well, obviously, thanks for all the compliments there. That is, that's very nice of you to say all that. When you look at where someone is at a point in time, and you think, it's just looks like a straight track right to that point, you know. And what you realize is
you had this plan since high school.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in my sixth grade, you know, write up for my teacher of, you know, professionally, what do you want to do later on in life? This is it. So, you know. But no, I mean, it seems that way when you look back, often for a lot of things, whether mm-hmm. it's, great instructors or great tax preparers like yourself or, you know, like what I do a lot of research. You look at great researchers or research papers and then you hear their backstory and you think, I had no idea that it kind of went through all the ups and downs to get there. And so, my story has kind of some of those too. And, you know, I came out of high school. I did not have accounting on the radar, surprisingly, at that point. And I actually wanted to go into musical theater. I loved, and I still do. And I think that's not necessarily uncommon for accountants. Like, they actually, music, you know, accountants are kind of devoid of emotion and, like,
true.
You know, some type of, like, personality. But,
I agree with that.
Music allows you to kind of just emotionally stimulates you. And so I always enjoyed music and acting. And so I thought coming out of high school, you know, I wanted to do musical theater.
So I'm assuming you went to a little bigger high school than I did because music theater wasn't on the radar in our small little South Georgia high school I grew up in. So where was high school at?
It was actually in a town called Mattawan, Michigan.
Okay.
And so, you know, we had probably about 1,000 students in our high school. Yeah. So it was big enough, you know, and we had some great teachers there in that area that really poured into me and were awesome. And
so is this like, I want to go on Broadway?
Yeah.
I want to be an actor. You were like, this is my path.
It was. And it was a great idea.
I'm so intrigued.
The main problem was I just wasn't that good at it. So, you know, like it doesn't matter how bad you want something. When you get to a professional level, the God-given gift has to be there. And it wasn't for me. And so, you know, I didn't know anything about the field at all. I was so naive. But, you know, I auditioned for musical theater at two colleges coming out, University of Michigan and Western Michigan University. University of Michigan took two people into the class.
Wow.
And Western took in three. And so, you know, I realized pretty quick I was in trouble when I went to the audition at Michigan. And I was, you know, sitting among the other people that were trying to get into the program.
Amazing, by the
and
way.
I was talking to, you know, one of the other guys that was applying for the program. I'm like, well, you know, you're just talking about background. He's like, oh, yeah, right now I'm starring in L.A. in this show, Picky School Theater show. And he's like, well, what have you done? I was like, oh, I played this role in my high school theater, you know. And I immediately realized, you know, I'm probably not going to be one of the three here. So, you know, and so you learn from these experiences. And so after I didn't get in to either of those programs, I had to think, okay, you know, is this just a setback or is this a signal? Mm-hmm. And, you know, discerning between those two takes some time. But I'm not somebody who likes to just sit around. And so I wasn't going to take a gap semester to figure it out. I just said, all right, well, I'll just get some of my general electives done, because if I go into that, I'll still need general electives. And if it's not for me, then I'll have done the general electives for whatever I needed to do. And so when I just went to a community college and I said, okay, well, if I'm picking among my general electives, what kind of classes would I be most interested in? And I've always thought that, you know, life is a business.
Love it.
Life yes. is a business. And so, you know, I'll just take a business class. And I had a great class by a gentleman named Ron Young. I still remember him, my first business class.
So you had a professor make a huge impact early on.
That's right. At a community college.
This is so cool.
First semester. And he just taught like general, you know, I think it was like a general business class. But he was the type of guy that was a great storyteller, you know, and he had some great work experience at different businesses around the country. And it just kind of lit my fire a little bit. And then I started to be like, yeah, probably the musical theater thing. I'm not too inspired to keep digging in harder and getting better. And so
the more you learned about business, the more you were skeptical of the music theater, right. Your odds and pay. You're like, wait a minute, hold on.
Right, you know. And it's just like with everything, coming out of high school, your view is so narrow. You know, like, well, what do you want to do with your life? I don't know. I've got an uncle that sounds like he's got a cool job. Maybe I'll do that. That's a pretty narrow perspective for making such a big choice. And so ultimately, you know, that's one of the purposes of college, is to try to open you up to different opportunities for your life.
Love that.
And so I had a great experience with a business class. I thought, you know what, maybe I should go into business. And I took some more business classes, one of them being accounting. And other students seemed to have a hard time with accounting. For me, I liked it. I don't know why I liked it necessarily, because I wasn't a particularly like neat and orderly person, you know, where, you know, my room's always picked up to the T and everything.
You don't eat the same thing for lunch every day.
No, I have gotten more like that. I think it's like rooted into me, perhaps. It's seeped into me, this accounting field. But at the time, I was not necessarily that way. But I took to it and I liked it. And I liked that there was kind of a set of rules and that it was challenging. And of course, you're going to like things that you're good at. So when everyone else is having a hard time and you're good at something, that might be a pretty good signal that you have a competitive advantage in this area over other people. And ultimately, that's what you can use later on in life to further yourself relative to everyone else. And so I continued to take the accounting classes. I eventually transferred from the community college to Western Michigan University, where I'm from and where I ultimately met my wife, Amy.
Yep.
And, you know, I took my first accounting class there, I remember, and it was harder. And I took my first exam, and I tell my students this at UGA, that I got, I think, a 76 on the first exam, and I was devastated. I had never scored so low on anything, and I was like, is this a signal?
Oh,
or is this
a
setback?
Question, yeah.
Right? Good. And for me, I just realized this is a setback. This isn't a signal that I'm not good at it. It's telling me that I need to go back to the drawing board and work harder. And either I can work harder and get better at this or not. And that kind of reframed a lot of how I have approached things in this field from then on. And I just, it taught me I had to work hard. Accounting is a field you have to work hard in. And then, but I like that. I just like that for some reason. And I find that that's the case for many people that go into the field.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I graduate with my undergraduate in accounting. I go work for a company called Stryker. And I worked there for a year. They're a big Fortune 100 firm, I think. And they say, Ben, you're doing great. You need to go get a CPA license. You need to go work for, you know, the Big Four. And I said, all right, well, there's no Big Four around here. I have to move to do that. And so I said, Amy, where do we want to move to? And we love rock climbing and skiing and hiking and yoga. And so we said, let's move. What I did is I said, I don't know where to move to. So I looked on the map at all the Big Four offices around the country. And I said, which one is the closest to the mountains?
Yes.
And so people think Denver, but actually it's Salt Lake. So I applied to one school, University of Utah, got into their master's program because you need a master's degree to get a CPA license in a lot of states.
Yep.
And so I moved there, got into their master's program, and ultimately went and worked for Ernst & Young. Got my CPA license and all of that. So things are going good. But about 2 years in, I'm like, man, I want to get a PhD. I want to be a professor, I think.
Why? Why do you think? Because, yeah, you – like, that's already high level. Like, you're
– right.
You're – I mean, you're next level at what you do at that point. You're crushing it, obviously. You're young. You're making good money.
Yeah.
What gave you the desire to, like, next level this thing even more at the time? Because you
– yeah.
I mean, I don't know – I didn't know y'all back then, but, again, you're rock climbing. You're living where you want to. You'll have an awesome life. Things – you're, right. like, crushing it. But you wanted more.
Well, and a PhD would require us to move too, right?
So you're going to have to give it up for that. To get, you know? Yeah.
But a few things. One is I had always thought of being a professor would be kind of cool. Okay. My uncle was a professor at Western in history. And I went on a program, study abroad program called Semester at Sea. It's this study abroad program on a cruise ship where you go around the world for a semester. And you stop at 13 different countries
that
along the way.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And that really opened my eyes up to like, amazing professors. You know, just Western had, you know, great professors, but this, they were leaders in their field. And I was blown away. And that kind of, you know, put the seed in there. And then in the master's program, there was a teacher that I was in her class, and she was asking, she was talking about something at the time, it was called stock option backdating. Essentially, well, it was kind of complicated, but managers were kind of retroactively adjusting the date of certain benefits they receive to make it so they're immediately worth a lot of money or worth more money.
Yeah.
And so I kind of raised my hand and I asked a question about that. That would be the type of a research question we would answer as academics. And she said, Ben, I don't know the answer to that question, but if you're interested in that type of that question, if you think that way, you might consider getting a PhD because that's exactly what we do in our program.
Wow.
And so I said, Christine – oh, that was her name, Christine Bodiston. I said, Christine, there's no way I can go back to school for five more years, right? Like I'm barely getting through and I'm in year five right now and I cannot double that with five more years. And but you know, that's what – that's the beauty of perspective. So I get into Ernst & Young. I worked there for 2 years and I would want to stay until manager if I was going to stay. Mm-hmm. So that would be 3 to 5 more years. And I said, well – I can stay here for 3 or 5 more years, so I can go get my PhD in 5 years. Which outcome do I like better? And it was amazing. Something that was so – I was so – be so unwilling to accept before became an immediate like clarity for me. Like it was so clear to be like, oh, actually, no, that is the choice.
Which is super cool and interesting because majority of the accounting personality or the numbers-based personalities don't like change. But you were okay with change and and weighing options and making decisions to walk away from something good for something better.
Right, yeah. And I don't know why I was open to that. You know, I always joke that, you know, my mom was an accountant and my dad was a teacher. So voila.
Oh, my God.
You know? Now, he taught fourth grade, you know, but – It is kind of ironic, it all makes sense
yeah. now. Yeah.
So, but you know, all that to say, that's kind of how I got into the field, and ultimately I placed at Georgia 11 years ago now, after I got my PhD.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know, you look at the career path and you think, oh man, well, you know, you kind of you wasted your high school years and that first, you know, attempt in college to really try to do musical theater. Like, now that's kind of too bad. You could have spent that time doing other things. And, you know, I joke with my students. I'm like, I actually think it worked out perfect because, you know, I perform in front of 800 people every Tuesday and Thursday.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
Those skills are very relevant in what you do.
I'm up there teaching 800 students every Tuesday and Thursday. I mean, that's a bigger congregation than a lot of the pastors in this community have, right? Like, I'm up there twice a week for 5 hours in front of all of those students. And so developing—
You're in front of more people than professional speakers and actors and—
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's a super— you know, it can be a very intimidating setting because I teach, you know, large sections of up to 300 students. And, you know, me getting comfortable doing that and working on that craft, I think has led to not just me being able to enjoy it more, but also a better experience for my students. And so, you know, sometimes these tangents you think you go on or that were worthless, they come back around and they're integral to what you do, you know, and so—
That's really cool, man. Such an awesome story. And I love the different parts of kind of how it changed and then hearing what your parents do and some of those features is really cool. And I don't know, your just logical approach to making decisions of, well, you know, I think I want to do this because of these reasons, so let's go do that. Or, hey, I like this option better than this option for the next 3 to 5 years. It sounds like you also— – You have a really cool mindset of always seeing the kind of long game of things, which is maybe that's an accountant way of thinking because that's something I've been so blessed to be gifted with and what's made turned out to be a lot of success in my career is 3 to 5 years isn't that long and seeing kind of the long aspect of kind of what that means for your trajectory of your life. That sounded like you had a pretty good handle on that throughout some of those decision-making processes.
Yeah, you nail it. I mean, I've always been somebody who's willing to sacrifice the short-term gain for the long-term gain.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that in general, that's been really good for me. I think, of course, sometimes if you always do that, then you actually never get to enjoy anything because the moment is always the short-term, right, in the current moment. So
there's a balance.
You have to, you know, and that's something that I've tried to work on too, to be able to enjoy the now and not sacrifice the now for some future benefit that who knows if it'll materialize. But yeah, you're right. And that's just, you know, I've done the StrengthFinder test before. And if you look at my top 5 strengths, they all align with this type of thinking.
Yeah, so. I love it. I want to get into the side of what you do every week with students and the number of students you're exposed to and how that things you can share with us. But before that, I want to highlight one thing you said and talked about just for a second. I think it's so important for every single listener out there, whether you're an entrepreneur, a business owner, whether you're trying to decide, hey, I want to go back to more school, anybody that wants to be really next level at what they do, if you want to be the best, I think it takes some sort of like natural like tendency of gift in that field or that skill set. I think it's all skill set, but if you're naturally gifted in something or you love it more than other people, I think it's a lot easier. But no matter what, you mentioned the work. I was willing to put in the work. Like, hey, this is hard. That's what makes it awesome to me is I like the work. I'm willing to put in the work to be the best and be next level. And so many people, I don't think, quite understand that. No matter what it is we want to do in life, I don't care if it's play the guitar or get your PhD or be a successful business owner with a huge company with a lot of employees, it takes putting in more work than 99% of everybody else out there. And that's really the secret and key to the whole thing, no matter what it is. And so there's not some magic behind-the-scenes scenario that makes all this stuff happen. It's the work. And if you're willing to put in the work and you're excited and gifted at something, like, it is a guarantee. But you got to be able to do that.
That's the truth, although it's kind of, you know, hard for people to hear sometimes,
it
right? Because
yeah.
there's no easy answer. I mean, so I'm an accounting professor at Georgia, and when I was a student, it's not that I'm not an accounting professor because this was so easy for me. When I was a student, I read the chapter before the professor lectured on it. And then in the test, we'd have a test over three or four chapters. I'd reread every single chapter and I would go through every single problem. And then my approach was always, I'm going to look at it, at, you know, a problem, and I'm going to have the answer key right next to me and I'm going to go through it. And if I get tripped up, no problem. I'm not going to waste time. I can see it and fix it immediately. Then I'm going to flip that answer key over. And it's going to kill me if I have to flip it over to look at the answer, right? So I'm going to go through that problem a second time and try not to flip over that answer key. And then the third time I'd go through it, I'd put that in my bag. And no matter what, I couldn't get the answer key out. And I'd be forced to see what I still don't know. I
love it. Yeah.
And that was my work ethic, you know? Like, that's how I got through the program. And it really rooted a work ethic that I still use today. I still, before I go into a class, after 11 years of teaching, I still pre-teach my lecture to myself in my office.
I love it. Yeah. That's, I mean, again, at this stage and this level, you're still putting in the work. And that's what I think keeps those levels of success, that relevance going, and makes you, again, continue to be the best at what you do. And I don't know, so many people, I think, don't recognize that in a lot of different things, aspects of life and business. You mentioned, you know, 600-800 students you're exposed to every week. You teach, you lead. You catch really smart, skilled students at places in their career and college of trying to make decisions of where to go next. Do I go into the business school? Do I go into accounting? Once I get into accounting, what do I want to do? They have to figure out how to work hard, how to pass hard tests, how to do something that's extremely hard that most people don't want to do. You figured out how to connect, how to lead, how to motivate this generation of our future employees, business owners, coworkers, and I think for a lot of us as business owners and entrepreneurs, we have absolutely no idea how to do that. Like, we don't even know how to connect. How in the world have you been able to do that? What tips, tactics, things can you share on what you do every day to help your students grow and learn and make decisions and show up and put in the work?
Yeah. Ooh, well, okay, so I'll talk a little bit about my time up on UGA. Of course, this is simply, you know, how I see it. This isn't UGA's official stance on anything. And, you know, I think it's the channel with which I connect to the students is accounting, right? Like, so that's what connects us. So we need to grow our relationship through something besides accounting, because that just doesn't naturally sell
itself. I agree.
It's
100%.
So, you know, like, it is, you have to kind of, I think authenticity is really important for these students. And so I think that that's what helps. So let me tell you a bit about the class. I teach Accounting 2101 up on, and it's for students who are typically sophomores. You get some later freshmen, some early juniors there, but these are students who ultimately are trying to get into the business school. Mm-hmm. And they're amazing students. I'm sure you've seen UGA's admittance records.
I couldn't get in now. It's insane.
They are amazing, right? And so they're great students. They're very well qualified. But this is, for a lot of them, they'll tell you, this is their first really hard class. And in fact, it was one of, historically, it's been one of the most highly dropped classes in the entire university, if not the highest.
This is the weed-out class.
Yeah, well, you took it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, it is it is something where students come in, they're nervous, they know about its reputation, they don't really know anything about accounting, so it's not like I'm coming in and can tell you anything about it to begin with.
To, like, hold their hand.
And so it's intimidating, and so... But, you know, by the end, I think even if they choose they don't want to do accounting, I think largely the feedback is that they very much enjoyed the class and they can appreciate the importance of the class and why accounting matters in business. And that's the goal. You know, I don't need everybody to become an accountant, but it's important for you to understand its role in society and why, you know, why we need it to make informed decisions.
I think we need to – okay. We're about to put that to the test right now because I love that. Accounting again, how important that is from a life, from a business scenario, from a numbers, from a money standpoint. Most of our entrepreneurs and business owners didn't take accounting, didn't go to business school. Yeah. They randomly ended up in business. Now they're successful. They're intimidated by accounting. They're intimidated by financials. They're intimidated by that side of the business, so they just ignore it. So we need you to translate and convince our business owners and entrepreneurs how important it is in life and in business to understand accounting, whether you want to be an accountant or not. So I'd love for you to share some things that say, hey, this is why I think it's important. This is what I tell my students and some things I think our listeners need to hear.
Yeah. I mean, accounting is going to tell you, you know, what's going on fundamentally with the business. You can have your thoughts or your beliefs. Everybody carries bias, right? Yep. Especially if you're a business owner, you know, you're the one that can sell a chocolate popsicle to a woman in white gloves, right? That's the old Tommy Boy reference right there.
Exactly right.
Like, something like that, ketchup popsicle maybe. You know, like you're just that into it. You're really good at selling it, but you have this bias and belief that that the product's amazing. But at the end of the day, accounting doesn't carry any of that baggage. And so, you know, it's going to kind of cut through and tell you the truth. And as an auditor, the irony I always thought with accounting is that before the audit, everybody – and an audit is basically where an external party, like a big four accounting firm, Ernst & Young, Deloitte, KPMG, PwC, they come in and they have a third-party assessment over a firm's performance. And when you go in there at first, everybody's nervous that you're going to review their work and all that stuff. But afterwards, and it comes out as a clean opinion, they love accounting and they love the audit because it tells them, you know, like the information that they knew was true. They can stand on it. But they're nervous up front when it's being put to the test.
Yep.
And so I think that tells you right there, like the difference in perspective highlights that it matters because you're nervous you might be wrong about the numbers and you're rejoiceful when you're right about the numbers. And that just kind of shows you that this stuff really does matter and it informs our decision sets.
I agree. That's why I'm so drawn to numbers, financials, accounting is no matter how we feel, the numbers tell the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can make up stories or we can talk about what our business is doing or we can talk about where we're going or what the future may hold. But at the end of the day, the numbers are the facts. The numbers tell the story. They show, and that's, I mean, is this a successful business? Is it not? Is this a viable product? Is it not? Are you spending too much here or not? Like, it's not, I think I should do more or this is good. The numbers guide you on every single aspect of your business and your life. If you look at numbers, if you track things for your family financially, the numbers tell you, I mean, essentially where you spend your money is what you care about. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing what you can learn. And I get so excited about numbers and money and finance and accounting because it just cuts through all the BS and tells you the truth. And I love that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's one of the critical roles within a business, mm-hmm. right? And I don't try to oversell it as the most, it's a non-revenue generating line of the business. So accounting is not going to win the business end of the day, right?
Right.
But it's going to be able to reflect
yep.
on how you were operating so you can make better choices going mm-hmm. forward. And in that way, it's a pretty critical role.
Yeah, I can tell you it's, for me, in at this point, I'm own well over 20-something businesses. I own, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 10 now. And accounting has been the differentiating factor that determined my levels of success versus other people's trying to start businesses or run businesses. My odds and percentage of success is way higher because I love accounting. I love numbers. And I let numbers guide the story behind mm-hmm. my decisions. And I think getting that education, whether you want to be an accountant or not, whether you want to work for Big Four, whether you want to be in a firm environment, getting an education in accounting is huge. And no matter what you do in any aspect as an employee or business owner or breadwinner in your family, you're paying the bills for your family, whatever it may be, it is such a valuable asset to have and skill set. I love it.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of to bring it back to the students that you were asking about, I mean, that's why, you know, the business school requires a certain number of accounting classes for all business majors, just to try to give them the foundation that they'll need.
Do you find, I think there's this misunderstanding with college kids these days and just those younger generations. They don't want to work very hard, or they don't want to be good at any certain thing, or they just want to play on Instagram and go on vacation. Do you see that, or is that just something stories we're making up in the world of being old business owners? When you look at the 20-year-old right now, the sophomore, the junior in college, the senior in college, you're like, oh my God, the future is amazing, or are you like, oh my God, our workforce is screwed? What do you see, because you deal with it every day?
Oh, I mean, I think the students are wonderful. And but they're students, right? Like, I'm not going to pretend like they should have the perspective that I have at my age or at their age, right? Like, I would be doing a very similar thing that they would do. And I don't think that their approach is that different than our approach. They're looking for the successful outcome they're looking for on the path of the least amount of resistance. Who doesn't try to do that?
That's what we all try to do.
That's what we all try to do.
Who can fault somebody for that? Right. Absolutely.
So that's what they're trying. That's what they're trying to do right now. And so what I have to do in my class is I have to convince them that working hard is in their best interest.
Okay.
And if you look back at the feedback.
Oh wow, that's ridiculously simple and makes so much sense.
I think if you were to look at my feedback and you'll see like. That it's generally very positive, but they'll also say, he's no BS. I don't think that those are mutually exclusive. Like, I don't think you have to be like super serious BS and no one's going to like you. Or if you want to be likable, you can't be holding the line. And so I talk to my students every day and going into class. I'm like, are you holding the bar today? Like, are you getting after it? Because this is the outcome that you said you want. I don't care what outcome you want. That's your choice. But if you want to get an A in the class, you need to hold the line, and accounting is not going to care what your preference is. At the end of the day, you're going to sit down in the room with a 20-page document that's blank with questions, and you just simply have to spend the next 2 hours going through it. And it's only you that can do that. And so you have to be prepared. And I think what they do in my class then is they feel like I give them the tools to be successful. But they have to learn how to use the tools, and I help them to learn how to use those tools. And so they get practice exams, and they get great practice problems to work on. And I try to give them a very intuitive and like logical lecture so that they can understand these difficult concepts. And I try to do it in a fun way. I'm not going in there and am dogged because I'm like, oh man, I got to teach this class again for the 10th year, 3 times in a row. You know, that's not why I get up for my lecture. I'm excited to get in there and work with those students and help them to try to understand it. My goal is how can I make it as simple as possible for them? And in that way, it's always kind of a fun challenge for me to work through.
I like that. Okay. You're exposed to a lot of business owners. Obviously, you're Amy's husband. Amy is like Miss Entrepreneur, rise and shine, leader. Like, she's connected to so many businesses in town. She's work with us, change my life, change my business, like so awesome. Where do we miss the mark as a business? Because what you just described, somewhere between you and that class and employees for us as business owners, we dropped the ball.
Yeah, that is a really great question that I'm not clear I've got a great answer to.
Because I don't know what we do, but we don't get that same performance and that motivation and excitement. I don't know if we're not casting the vision. I don't know if there's not a trust of getting what they want by putting in the work with us as a business owner. Like, somewhere in there, we screw that up. And I know it's us because they're successful. They work hard. They come out of – UGA is freaking hard. It is next level. Y'all are delivering like – the next level student to our workforce, but we lose 9 employees for every 1 we keep. So it means we're screwing it up somewhere. Yeah.
I mean, I wish I had a good answer for you there and for your audience. I'm sorry. I mean, I could conjecture, but I don't, you know, I don't really, I don't really have, it might be more productive for me to tell you how I think I develop my bond with the students.
Yes.
And then absolutely. You guys maybe let can see if that generalizes to your setting. So, you know, for me, I feel like the students come in and they know the class is going to be hard, mm-hmm. but, and I tell them that I'm upfront with them about that, but that they've got a champion in me trying to help them out. Mm-hmm. And so I build a connection with my students. And one thing that I've always been amazed by is I start the first 5 minutes of my class off asking them, how was their weekend?
Okay.
And in a room of 270 people, no one wants to say anything. So it's terribly awkward. And I just, every year I think, man, I shouldn't do this anymore. And then I say, oh, well, okay, since it sounds like you guys are all ready to be future accountants, you do nothing, you've got no personality. That's wonderful, right?
Oh, that's a good icebreaker.
Yeah, right. But then I say, oh, well, this year weekend, you know, we went to my son's football game and my daughter's soccer practice, or we did this or we did that. And I just talk to them a little bit about my life and my family. And then we get into the lecture. And so I'll do a 3-minute recap on what we talked about last time, and we get into new stuff. And then in the next class, I'll ask, how was your weekend? What'd you guys do? And again, it's terrible. By the end of the semester, we maybe have a few people who are willing to talk, likely because of like, good Lord, let me just say something so this guy will have something to hear. But you know what I hear at the end of every single semester? Professor Whipple really does a great job connecting with us. In the first, he starts the lecture off every day.
Even though they don't answer the daggum question.
That's right.
They still appreciate being asked.
That's right. That's right. They care about being asked. And you know what? It's not that they didn't want to answer the question. It's that they didn't want to answer the question in front of 270 people.
Sure.
Okay. That's a key difference. And so, you know, I think they like that. I think that helps to build a relationship. And it's been that way for 11 years, whether I taught classes of 50 or I've taught classes of 300. It always – I start the same way, and I think that builds this connection. And then from there, what I think the students see is they see – you know, a lot of these students have ambitions to get married. A lot of these students have ambitions to have kids. A lot of these students have ambitions to like their job. And to work hard. I think actually they do ultimately like the idea of working hard, even though it is hard to work hard. And so I feel like I can be up there and provide them with a model example of what that looks like, and that if you do those things, it can lead to successful outcomes. It's not superficial. It's not some short-term click on a website. This is long-term real. And it's available for you if you put in the time. And I think that they ultimately appreciate that and get a little bit inspired by that.
I love that. And I think I identified a few places where on my side, and maybe this connects with some other business owners out there, where we missed the boat. I think we expect them to come in to understand they are here to work hard. We don't communicate that, and we don't communicate this is what it takes to get to this level, and this is the time it takes, and this is what you got to put in. I think that's a little more defined in the calendar of the school year and semester and how it works. It's a little less defined in business, and we're probably not relaying or communicating that very well. And I know for sure, especially me as a business owner, if I ask a question twice and I can't get an answer, that's when we go so negative, or we get so impatient, and we're mm-hmm. like, oh, this generation, I can't get them to talk about anything or open up. I try to connect with them in their lives or ask them how their weekend was. They won't answer, and so I'm not asking that anymore. We're just going to get to work. And then, I don't know, for some reason, we start playing the excuse and the victim card as business owners. And I think if we – put in the work and keep asking the questions and keep seeing it as a way to connect, whether they answer the dang thing or not, it works, and they see you care and you're asking the question over and over.
Yeah, I think that maybe I would ask a person this, a job owner this, sure. if they came to me with this idea. And that is, you know, you're hiring a new student out of school right now. Mm-hmm. All right, now take that student in that job and – And if you were going to hire somebody that had 10 to 15 years of experience in that role, okay, or in equivalent roles or maybe slightly above for the more experienced person, their job functions are going to be different. But in terms of how you're treating that employee, the leadership you're applying for that employee, how do they vary between the two? Because they should.
And they probably don't.
They better.
We try to manage everybody the same, but they better. You're right. My God, it's a whole different employee and situation.
Yeah. Is it fair to expect a student who's just coming out of school that has had – you're like their first real job, that the amount of leadership and mentoring that they need is equivalent to somebody who's 10 or 15 years out? I don't think so. If I'm 10 or 15 years out, I don't need that. And in fact, we're wasting time going through that. But somebody who's you just can't have the expectation be the same for both of them. And so, you know, I would just ask, what are you doing? What do you see as differences across your leadership structure on how you're leading people based off of where they're at in their career?
Man, this is really good. It's super enlightening and truly going to change the way I go back and look at things inside of my business. Because I struggle tremendously with the leadership with that younger and experienced employee. And I've been told, and I had somebody leave. I mentored somebody a few years ago, and they left and took a job somewhere else. And I was devastated. And the feedback when I ask them is, one of the negatives was, I try to manage everybody the same. And I didn't quite understand. I'm like, I thought that's what you're supposed to do. I'm being fair. I'm like trying to like lead everybody and manage everybody the same. And it was a young kid out of school. That was his first job out of college. And the more I understand that, and the more people like you that have seen this put that into perspective, it makes a difference in our lives as business owners and how we need to approach things. That's huge.
And I would say, like, just ask them. They're honest. Like, just ask them, how's it going? Or what are you trying to get out of this job? And also hold them accountable. Like, if I've got a policy in my – here's my policies in my class. If you're asleep in my class, I'll ask you to leave in front of everyone. If you're late in my class, I hold the first two rows open in the center of the class front for you to come sit down. So if you show up late, you're walking in front of everyone and sitting down in the front two rows.
Public accountability.
There's no hiding in the back row with your hoodie on or anything like that. That's not how it's going to work in my class.
Yep.
And then if you're talking in my class, you get the dad look. If you ignore the dad look, you're going to get the tap on the shoulder asking you to stay after class to talk to me. And then I'm going to ask you, what's going on? Why are you disrupting my lecture? Or if you're playing chess on your computer while I'm in there, I'm going to ask you to shut your laptop and talk to me after class. And I'm not afraid of confrontation. Uh-huh. Confrontation being a jerk is one thing, but confrontation, just asking someone to do the right thing, is not something that I feel like I should shy away from.
100% agree.
And so sometimes I feel like when people aren't acting a certain way, it's easier for me to tell my colleague how, oh, can you believe they're doing this or that? Versus directly talking to the person and giving them a chance to correct their behavior. I can tell you how many students that I went to and said, hey, I don't think what you're doing is the right thing in this class, or what's going on. They end up being accounting majors. They end up reaching out to me, thanking me later on, or talking about how important I was in their life, because they need that. They need someone to hold the bar or encourage them to hold the bar when they're not. And so I would maybe, you know, I would also maybe think about that as you're trying to work with this student's coming right out of school. You got to tell them when they're not doing it the right way so they can correct it. If you don't tell them and they don't know, it's a blind spot for them. It's not fair to expect them to change.
Super inspiring and absolutely true. I love it. Man, so many just valuable tips and things we need to know and understand as business owners, as coworkers in life, leading anybody on any level and making that just intentional approach of how we're handling that and not being afraid of conflict and being able to differentiate between the different levels of where somebody's at in their journey or in their career path or in their job or experience, I think is huge. This has been so awesome and truly, truly life-changing for a lot of our listeners and me included. This is one of my favorite episodes. I knew it was going to be great, and I didn't even think this is what it was going to be great about, so this is even better. I don't know what you have left in the tank, but man, this is the time for how we end the episode with the max out moment of the Stronger Business Podcast. This is, you get to leave one tactic, one tip, one takeaway, a piece of advice for listeners. It can be something to do, something to read, something to know. It could be something to go out and do this weekend. It could be something to listen to. It could be a quote. It's just a takeaway. It's Ben's max out moment on the Stronger Business Podcast. If you're going to leave our audience with one closing thing, one tactic, one tip, what would that be? What would the piece of advice or what would you leave our audience with?
Well, it's quite the lead in there. It's kind of hard to think of something of quite that level of importance
here. Trying to put you on the spot.
So for me, I always try to kind of
keep. By the way, we've had like 10 max out moments in this whole episode. So yeah, you set the bar pretty high already.
I kind of try to keep the following kind of things in mind. So maybe it's not one, but we're going to go with a basket of thoughts. How about that?
Love it.
So one is, I would say, be fair to yourself. So what we're all trying to do is difficult. We're not going to get it right perfectly all the time. And you only got 24 hours in a day. So figure out where you want to allocate that time. But, if I'm an academic that has kids and a family and all that stuff, is really important to me, or if you're a business owner and that's the case, and then you got another person who's single, like the way you can operate within the day is going to be different, and that's okay because you're just making different life choices. So you can't compare yourself always to some of these other people. Be fair in that regard. Second, I always try to keep in mind, this thing's a journey. So just, find the reward in the journey and you never know where it's going to go, but just enjoy it because none of it's promised in the future. And what I always tell my students, Amy told me that this was coming. She said that she thought one of the fun max out moment idea was that 6 weeks into the semester, I asked my students four questions. I say, what's your major? What are five jobs you'd want to do in that major? And they can name like one or two only because they're still trying to figure it out. Uh-huh. And then I ask them this is the question.
Ooh, yeah.
Four words. Would you hire yourself?
Ooh, that's good.
Would you pay yourself money for what you want to do? And the whole class laughs. But I feel and because they would say no. No. And I tell them, I go, yo, guys, that was not a fair question. That's why you're in college, right? And you should, but you're graduating in 2 years. And my job is to get you from a no to a yes.
Love it.
Right? But that perspective, I think, generalizes beyond just the student that's a sophomore. It's us at any point in the career. Like, if you're wanting to see if you're holding the bar, would you pay yourself? Would you hire yourself? And if the answer is no, well, then maybe self-reflect a little bit and determine how you get to a yes. And if the answer is yes, then have confidence in who you are and what you're doing because you're right on point.
Man, I love that. That's so good. I'll tell you, as we look back at those things, I'm in the middle of one of those right now, your first one of I had a different life 9 months ago. Mm-hmm. Lauren and I, we didn't have kids. We've been together for almost 15 years. I got to focus on like travel and experience and career and fitness goals and all those things. And I still have a lot of goals and a lot of things I want to accomplish, but it's changed. I've wanted it to change. The priority now with our little boy and like things are shifting. And now it's interesting. I used to not understand the drastic difference of priorities in comparison of like people with kids, people without kids, your career paths or different things you're going through and dealing with. You got to be fair to yourself. You got to understand who you are and your priorities. I think that's super cool. I love that. Probably the most eye-opening thing to me in life and in business, and it took me about 10 years to recognize this, is your second tip, and that's you better enjoy the journey. Because this is all a journey. And I've learned that I find more joy and wisdom of putting in the work and the journey than I do the reward or the goal or accomplishing something. It's not that you shouldn't celebrate your goals or accomplishments or achieving things, but it's I'm a little lost once I get through with the journey. I look for another journey, and I think that's super cool. And so, man, all those things and those questions. I love that from a business owner aspect, too, of like as the business owner, would you hire yourself and pay yourself to do the job you're doing right now? Or how are you showing up compared to what you would pay somebody to show up? Mm-hmm. And so you can, at any stage, you can ask that question. I think that's super cool, man. This has been awesome. I've loved this episode. It's super cool. Y'all've got to, if you're not following Amy Whipple, Ben's wife, and you're not connecting with Ben and Amy, they're such awesome people. They do so much in our community, in the business world. God, leading students, changing lives. Y'all are making such an impact all across the board. Two awesome kids. Y'all are, man, I don't even know. They're going to, like, take over the world. And so it's super cool to see, man. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for being on the Stronger Business Podcast. It's been a blast. For all you out there listening, go out, crush it this weekend. Put these things to play in your life and in your business and what you do. And we'll see you next week. Shake your money maker like somebody about to pay you. I see you on my radar. Don't you act like you afraid of shh. You know I got it. If you want to come get it, stand next to